This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Boy, this song, Lowrider, is probably 55 years old. We were funky. Yeah, 1970, 10-year-old John. Lowrider. We were funky. That was 1970. Don't give us enough credit, us old folks. Yeah, you're thinking, oh, you're listening to like Glenn Miller and the Andrews Sisters, and you were singing show tunes like with Rosemary Clooney. No. 404-726-0929. Have a full hour plus here to talk just to you as a guest on the program. If you're a Braves fan, I'd love to hear from you. If you're a Hawks or United fan, you're welcome into the program. College basketball, you stunned about one ACC team in the final 32. What do you think of the SEC so far? Are they underperforming in your opinion? Or listen, you got to let it play out. You can weigh in on anything you want to in college basketball. And then there's the Falcons. And I've been going through and back and forth with all of you, again, a month before the draft. And all I'm doing, people get so mad at me sometimes on the X, all I'm trying to do is analyze the situation. Okay, that's all. You want them to take a wide receiver? You're out of your mind. You're an idiot. You're a moron who doesn't understand football. I didn't say that. I said I'm trying to get inside their head of what areas of concern they have and how Terry Fontenot has drafted so far in the 4 years that he's held the reins of the NFL draft of the Atlanta Falcons. Okay, he's drafted offense, right, all 4 years, a tight end, a wide receiver, a running back, and a quarterback. He's drafted the guy that was the best offensive player at the top of his board all 4 years. So if that's a pattern, I don't know what to tell you. Let's go to Chin here. He's on with John, 404-726-0929. Hey, Chin, welcome to the show.
I'm gonna go to that thing where you're talking about only one ACC school in the Final Four, in the NCAAs, and I think when you look at this year, and you think about NIL, and you figure that NIL started what in the middle of 2021, we're probably at a steady state of kind of like what players are worth and what. You know, what you can get as turns with a return. So everybody kind of has some sense of value. I think right now, the question that will go, because folks are going to get suspicious, is like, you know, why are there some powers that are no longer very good? Is it because their signature coaches are kind of running down? Or is it because they were doing a better job handing out $1,000 handshakes than others? Because right now, I think everybody looks at two of the big blue chip programs in America, one out in the Midwest and one within the ACC, and you're like, wow, that's completely collapsed. And you're just wondering, like, how much of that is I don't think the way to make money is to develop my craft and skill that this coach could give me. And how much of it where people are just saying, like, look, I'm probably not going to be an NBA guy. And I don't want to go to Europe or China and play 10 years in another country where I don't know, where I could make that up by basically hopscotching two or three
schools.
Well, okay,
but to your point here, let's just kind of cut to the chase here. Because you're talking about Hubert Davis in North Carolina and the now-departed Mike Woodson in Indiana. Okay, so
well,
in those
Kansas.
Two... Well, Bill Self is... Okay, Kansas had a down year by Kansas standards. It was a down year by Kansas standards. It's like saying Gonzaga had a down year by Gonzaga standards. I don't imagine Kansas is going to...
Exactly. That's exactly
You know, they're going to be fine. So, but the question of those two guys really is more interesting to me because they were both superstar players at their respective universities, beloved by the fans, and both have struggled. Woodson struggled and walked away from the job. He was just so frustrated. It's just you've got to get the right coach. I mean, that's all. I mean, if you have the right coach and you have the backing of the boosters, then things are going to go fairly well for you. That's just kind of the recipe right now in this day and age. So
yeah.
But all those teams, I mean, I'm not giving up on Bill Self, that's for sure.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, when I was living out in Tulsa, I would always follow Kansas because they were always good, whereas Oklahoma State would be hit or miss every now and then. And then when you looked at Kansas, they always seemed to get not necessarily, I guess outside of Paul Pierce, not necessarily the top of the top of your McDonald's All-Americans. They'd get somebody
who's like Ray Allen.
That's several decades, though. You know, you're talking Ray Allen, Paul Pierce
like
across
Danny Manning.
This school, though. But this is a heritage school. You would figure that they would get more than their fair share, right?
And well, I mean, maybe they're not paying. I don't know, Chin. Maybe they're not paying as much as some other schools. I have no idea. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is that.
But they're also in the Big 12 and not in the Big 10 of the SEC, which in the Big 12 is really good, but I don't. It's just kind of a tick below the other two.
I guess the question is, like, were they in a time pre-NIL better at the $1,000 handshake? Or was it a program where you say, like, you know what?
Well, I don't know.
I'm not NBA good.
I'm going to get lost in this conversation, Chin. I'm sorry. I appreciate it. I have no answers for you to go on that. You know, back to the tournament itself here. I mean, I think Kansas and Indiana and North Carolina are going to be fine. They're legacy programs. Do appreciate the call, 404-726-0929. Let's go to Will. Hey, Will, welcome to the show. Oh, we lost Will. 404-726-0929. Hey, Will. Will? No, I don't think I have Will. You put Will back on hold here. Everything, if you get the right coach, things tend to be, what happens is not only do you attract players who want to go play for a coach at a certain school, that's certainly a huge thing because the coach has a reputation for, you know, winning games and turning out professional players and things of that nature, but it also ignites and intrigues the base of boosters. And the fan base, yes, but it's the boosters that really count because they're the money folks, right? And so this is why Arkansas, which is playing St. John's today, went out and spent so much money to get John Calipari. Because what does Arkansas have at its disposal? Well, it's got some history, some great history in college basketball. And it's got some money. Because right there in Northwest Arkansas, you have three outlets that have seriously deep pockets and want to spend on the Arkansas Razorbacks. One is Jerry Jones. The next is Tyson Chicken. And the third is called the Walton family. You do know where Walmart is located, right? That'd be Fayetteville. Yeah, that's right. So Arkansas has all the cash. So look at St. John's. Why did St. John's do this amazing tour? Well, Rick Pitino. Oh, you mean they got the right coach? Yeah, that's what happens. So when you get a Calipari against a Rick Pitino, and suddenly Arkansas and St. John's are relevant again. So it's about getting the right coach. And that's what North Carolina has not been able to do. It's what Indiana was able to do with Tom Crean, and then they gave up on him, and I'm not sure why to this day, because even though he didn't work out so well at Georgia, he did work out well at Indiana. I mean, he had Indiana number one in the nation in two separate years with two different sets of players. had him at number one in the nation. But when you're talking about, you know, the legacy of a Dean Smith or the legacy, and that's not to say other, obviously other coaches had success at North Carolina, or the legacy of a Bob Knight, you know, so when you have that kind of holding over you, you need to go out when you have Bear Bryant and the legacy, and again, coaches at Alabama football, certainly, you know, Gene had a hell of a run there for a while, won a national title, right? But it took Nick Saban to kind of actually kind of close the chapter. And they haven't really closed the chapter at Indiana quite yet. And no matter what Roy did at North Carolina, he wasn't Dean. And so have they really closed that chapter? A little bit maybe, because Roy over, you know, nobody at Indiana. Tom Crean even admit this, since he didn't win a natty, Mike Davis or Tom Crean. So you got to get the right coach, kind of take the program in a new direction, give it a new kind of vibe and new life. And that's what this, you know, they're being charged with having to do. So that's all. I mean, but if you look at the Final 32, you could talk about legacy programs. What are we talking about here? Purdue, Arkansas, St. John's, Michigan. We're looking at Gonzaga, Houston, UCLA, Tennessee, UConn, Florida, Baylor, Duke, Kentucky, Illinois, Alabama. Well, Alabama's kind of new, really. I mean, I know that, look, they had some really nice years with Wimp, but this is kind of new to them. Maryland, you know, former national champion. So you go on down the list. Michigan State, former national champion. Arizona, former national champion. Oregon, actually, former national champion. It was just 1940. That's all. It's a long time ago. So there's a lot of blue blood still in the 32 here. Do we have this Will yet? Hello, Will.
John.
Hey, there you are.
John.
Yeah.
Look here. I heard Jacksonville wanted to get rid of that former Georgia end down there, and they asked him for a first or second round. Why haven't the Falcons jumped on that?
Wait a second. Back up here. You got to be more clear, because I didn't see this story you're talking about. What are you saying?
Jacksonville have that former number one defensive end down there that's still on his rookie contract. They got him up for trade.
Talking about Trayvon?
Why haven't the Falcons jumped on that? I would give them first in a minute. He's still on
his
rookie contract.
He plays for Jacksonville. Why? Because he plays for Jacksonville.
Well, still, he averaged 10 sacks the last 2 years since he's been
there. Yeah, because
there.
He plays for but he plays for Jacksonville. I don't know what you're telling me, Will. I'm confused.
They got him up for trade.
They do? That's not news to me.
They've been talking about that on all the sports, on the sports shows.
I had not heard that.
You hadn't heard that? You hadn't heard that?
Nope.
Well, check and see, because I think I heard it on this station and the other station.
Okay. I don't know. I had not heard that. If it happened, I just missed and everything else that I'm watching here. The Trayvon Walker.
They're saying the new general manager is trying to start over and get rid of players. You haven't seen that?
I'm looking through Trayvon Walker here on the. I'm not seeing that anywhere.
It's not showing up.
Jaguars trading. Oh, okay. What is this? Okay, so who is this that said this? Jaguars trading former first overall pick to Falcons. That's a dead set. This blockbuster trade could happen. All right. So apparently there, I guess I missed this one. Apparently Jackson might be floating him.
I don't understand it either, but if they are, I will jump on it in a minute.
I would give him
a first and a fifth for Trayvon. He was the number one overall pick, and he's had 10 sacks each year, and he's just going into his third year, and he's on his rookie contract. So you can't lose on a deal like that, and he's a proven commodity.
So these are just, these are rumors. Okay, well, we'll see if that comes out. All right, thanks, Will. Thanks for pointing that out to me. 404-726-0929. Apparently these are... I don't dabble much in the rumor mill, but apparently there are some rumors that Trayvon Walker could be available. But It looks like the Jaguars want a first-round pick and a star. Okay. I don't know what the deal is with that down there. All right. Anyway, if that happens, then we'll deal with it and we'll react to it. But that's really not kind of in my universe at the moment. 404-726-0929. If you're hanging on, I promise you we'll make it on. Be patient. We'll get right to you with John Fricke on Saturday on Sports Radio 90 Time the Game. Sports Radio 90 Time the Game, Saturday afternoon. John Fricke, the round of 32 is now underway. Purdue and McNeese. It is Purdue. Let's see, they're getting an update. 17-6 Purdue in this game. McNeese is going to have a tough order here with Purdue. Big Ten's been pretty darn good. Though I did learn when I was up here, when I came up here to, you know, as you know, I'm in Bloomington, Indiana at the moment, dealing with some family issues, and my wife is an IU grad, and the Indiana and Purdue, they hate each other like the Falcons and the Swampers. I mean, fire of a thousand suns. They hate each other. Oof, it's like, oh, you guys really hate each other, don't you? Yeah, they really do. Okay, I got it. It's a rivalry. 404-726-0929. Let's welcome Scott into the program, and you could jump in. You want to talk Braves, Falcons, you want to jump in on the tournament, you can, at 404-726-0929. Hey, Scott.
Hey, John, what's going on, bud?
What up?
All right, so this is more of a, you're a smart guy. You are a smart guy. You're very straight to the facts. I really have a question for you, and literally it's more of a, how many D1 head coaches' jobs are going to change after seeing what the NIL does to these teams? Like, the SEC has never been so strong. It's crazy. And it's just, I have the over-under at 20 on D1 schools. And secondly, because I have my son in the car, is there any chance you can give a shout-out to my boy Travis? That's it. Just an answer.
Wait, rephrase the question again for me, Scott.
What would be your over-under on head coaching jobs in D1 basketball be after this season?
Well, of course, it'll be at least that. I mean, there are 316 D1 teams.
Okay.
I mean, you're just talking about, like, the Power Four? I mean, is that?
Yeah, pretty much the Power Four, but I would say, like, what would be your over-under overall, too? Like, how many?
I mean, when you have 14. Look, if you make the tournament, right, I mean, it's pretty much job security even if you bow out. So, you know, that's 14 schools in the SEC that are probably not changing their coach at the moment. So, I mean, Indiana did in the Big Ten. Iowa did. They fired Fran McCaffrey. I think they believe that there was Drake's current head coach, Ben McCollum, was interviewed by Indiana. I think Iowa covets him, and so they didn't want him to go to Indiana, so they fired McCaffrey to try to get – that's what I think is going to happen. But all along, Indiana was talking to Darian DeVries, like, way before then, and so they were just waiting on that to happen. We'll see how DeVries works at Indiana. That's two Drake coaches. And Drake is playing today. Right. Oh, my gosh. Drake's in the middle of everything, seems. So at the moment, I wouldn't say – a whole lot. I don't know. In the Power Four, which is, of course,
the ACC has struggled, so that's my only side of that.
Probably by Power Five. Yeah, I know. The ACC has struggled a little bit. And, you know, I mean, did North Carolina save the job by making the tournament? Maybe. NC State obviously has made a change. They're getting Will Wade in there. So, I mean, there'll always be a few. I don't know that this year, you know, we'll see an inordinate number of coaches changes. I'm not anticipating that anyway.
But so the last thing I asked, if you don't mind, would you give my buddy, my son, Travis, a little shout out?
Well, hi, Travis.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
No worries, Scott. All right, Travis.
Have a good one.
Yeah, your dad's a good caller. Travis should be a caller. I should ask him how old Travis is. 404-726 1-800-919-0929 if you want to be part of the program. Travis sitting in the car, and now Travis is, the other thing about it is kind of funny, is Travis is realizing what the delay is, because he hasn't heard this part of it. Hi, Travis. He hadn't heard that yet. He'll hear it in about 30 seconds. 404-726-0929. We are knocking on the door of so many things. Again, a reminder that if you're looking for coverage of the tournament on the radio, our sister station, 1380 AM, News and Talk WAOK, 1380 AM, is the place to go, because today, in about an hour, I'm taking you for another hour to 1:30, and coverage with Mike Connie and Jason Longshore of Atlanta United and FC Cincinnati, live from Ohio. And so United and FC Cincinnati coming up at 1:30, and then the Hawks tonight at State Farm against Golden State, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock with the real voice of the Hawks. See if the Hawks, Orlando won last night. The Hawks lead over Orlando is one game, and that's the race for 7th and 8th, and you really want to finish 7th if you can, because not only do you have to win just one playing game, but if you're the 7th seed, you get that game at home. So it's a big race between the Magic and the Hawks for that number 7 seed. So they could really use a win tonight. Now, the news for, of course, Atlanta Hawks are playing without Jalen Johnson, as you know. They're also playing without, you know, they're all banged up with certain other guys, too, right? So they're out for the year. But anyway, tonight, Warriors are going to play without Steph Curry. It doesn't look like it was a bad injury against Toronto, but he didn't make the trip. And so there'll be no Steph tonight. If you're going to the game, expect to see Steph Curry. He's not going to be there. He's not in town. So, but that doesn't mean the Warriors aren't dangerous, that's for sure, because Jonathan Kuminga is always kind of eating us alive, and there's still Draymond, and there's still Jimmy, and ever since Jimmy went to the Golden State Warriors, their record is 16-3. But again, no Steph Curry for the game tonight. If you're going there, Trey against Steph. No, not so much. Trey against Jimmy, but not Trey against Steph. 404-726-0929. I think I'm going to go back to this. I've been trying to talk to a lot of Falcons fans on X as we get towards the draft here, and explain a couple of things. One, it's still a very fluid situation. If you had asked me 5 days ago how I stacked where I think they might be looking at in terms of holes, not necessarily the player they were going to take, safety would have been at the top of the list. But then they turn around and sign Jordan Fuller. All right, scratch that one. Because now they didn't sign Leonard Floyd and Morgan Fox and Jordan Fuller to be backups, okay? They signed them and paid them to start. So this is something that some people are like, well, we got to draft this guy, you know, we got to draft Malachi. Why would you draft Malachi Starks now? You're not starting him. I want that number one pick to start. I want the number one pick to come in and start. And Malachi Starks is not starting for this team. Jordan Fuller is starting. Well, but Malachi Starks is better than Jordan Fuller. Okay, but he's not getting paid like Jordan Fuller. Okay? And so they're not playing three safeties. Then, you know, they signed Jordan. So it's tip of the hand. All of this says to me, again, I want to kind of circle back on all this. So I tell you what I see. All of the signings that they've done, it's like a simple little signing this week. Felipe Franks coming back. And they were like, why the hell is Felipe Franks coming back? Well, it's just a depth move at tight end. But there's also something else in there, right? What is that? It's a scout team quarterback. He could be an emergency quarterback. He could be that quarterback that sits on the bench for that emergency quarterback because he's been around the league enough. They could actually kind of use him as a slash. So maybe that's what they're thinking of doing. It gives them hey, listen, we got to put somebody in. I don't know, it gives them a little bit of a buffer if they do manage to trade Kirk Cousins. Could they, in theory, use Felipe at quarterback? I mean, you don't want to, obviously, but you want to use him on special teams. You want to use him at tight end. But he's played enough quarterback in his life that if you had to throw him into the game, it was like, did you know who the emergency – one of the great things about – go back to 2016 – do you know who the emergency quarterback was for the team? Do you know who the emergency punter was for the team? The emergency quarterback and the emergency punter were the same guy. Mohamed Sanu. That he was the emergency quarterback because he had played a little bit of that at Rutgers, and he was the emergency punter because he had done a little bit of that. So it was like, oh, okay. So Franks is just it's a depth move. And they've gone into these moves that Terry Fontenot has made in terms of depth and shoring up the offensive line with signing those four guys as depth moves in the offensive line, do they need a center? Sure. Are they going to take a center in the first round? No. Do they need another wide receiver? Yes. If the right player is there, but it really doesn't matter whether it's a safety, an interior defensive lineman, an outside linebacker, even an offensive lineman, okay, that's fair enough. The only two positions you're not drafting anybody into are quarterback and running back, not at the moment. I mean, not with the first round, obviously. In theory, they could draft a quarterback later in the draft, sure. They could absolutely draft a quarterback later in the draft. But that would be a later in the draft thing, you know, fifth round or seventh round. Well, they don't have a fifth rounder, so never mind. It'd have to be a seventh rounder. This is all set up by Terry Fontenot to do one thing and one thing alone. Draft the highest rated player on his board, regardless of position, which he's done for all four drafts. He's done this. Drafted the high into positions where you already have players. Don't need a running back. You got Tyler Algier. I'm taking Robinson. He's the number two guy on my board. You don't need a quarterback. You got, I'm taking Penix. He's got the, he's 1 and 1A, number one guy on my board. You don't need a tight end. I'm taking, you know, Kyle Pitts is the number two player right now. I'm taking that. So, and Drake London was really highly ranked. He had him ranked higher than where he picked him. So there's going to be somebody that's there on their board when they get to 15, if I'm presuming they don't trade. Now, if there isn't, then they may say, okay, now we could trade down and still get, you know, the cornerback from Texas Brown or Emin Wari, the corner from South Carolina, and we may be able to trade into a position of need in order to pick up a third rounder so that we can go back up in the second or just, you know, increase our draft stock. So just kind of get in their mind of where they're going here, you know, in terms of, but he's going to take the best player available on the board, almost regardless of position. He's going to take the best player available. Now, this Trayvon Walker thing, I'll be honest with you, I didn't see it. I had to search it. It's just a rumor. So, I don't know. Chargers are saying they're interested. Jacksonville apparently is asking for the sun and the moon. You know, they want... I don't see that happening for the Falcons. That just... But, you know, again, stranger things have happened here. Unless Jacksonville, for some reason, wants Kirk Cousins, which I don't think they do. I don't think they want Kirk Cousins. But with Jameis signing with the Giants, that window for Kirk Cousins to go somewhere else before the draft is starting to shut. So the only thing I think I know at the moment is that I think Kirk Cousins could be here a minute. What do you think? 404-726, and this is what I think, guys. I don't have, I'm just working my way through it. 404-726-0929. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm not going to say the first game of the round of 32 is over. Purdue and McNeese, they're in the under 8 timeout in the first half, so they played a little over 12 minutes. And in those 12 minutes, McNeese State has 11 points. So, yeah, it's probably not good. Yeah, probably not good. 404-726-0929 if you want to be part of the program here. Let's go to Meet. I had a friend of mine named Tony.
What's up, Bill? How you doing?
Whose nickname was Meet when I worked at CNN. Hey, Meet, what up?
What's up? What's going on? Man, I want to address the disrespect of Terry Fontenot, man, because this man has done it. He got balls, man. You have to have balls to do the unpopular move. And it's almost like this man, he foreseen that, hey, we may need a quarterback. And he foreseen the talent of Michael Penix. He feel like, hey, man, this 36-year-old quarterback with an Achilles injury, and we got a talented quarterback, and I'm going to take a quarterback. And for him to be able to have the balls to take a running back at number 8 when we didn't need one, takes balls. He drafted Drake London, so
Enough with the balls. We got that part of it. Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me. It's interesting to me that, you know, look, he's got to win, and if he wins now, you know, he's gonna be fine, because everybody talks about the four number one picks that we've gone over a million times, but he also has other starters that he's drafted. You know, and
of course,
Bergeron. Obviously, he drafted Bergeron. Yeah. He drafted Rook, and now Rook is going to get a chance to start. He drafted Epikadi. He drafted Troy Anderson. He drafted Braylon Trice. We'll see if he's got something. Zach Harrison. You know, I mean, you can go down the list, you know. So, again, they've got some other things to do. So the question becomes, I still think the team has some talent, but it obviously has, you know, to improve certain areas. And some fans tend to think that it's zero sum. Let's try and remember, Meat. Jimmy Lake is not coaching this defense.
Yeah, he was. He wasted the talent of the Simmons and the other guy that they went and signed from New England.
Judon, right? Yeah.
These guys were above average talents that he wasted, and those were good moves. Those were solid moves that Terry Fontenot made in the 12 o'clock hour of the season of training camp.
Right, and it took them until late in the season to make an adjustment, whatever that adjustment was, ended up in obviously with Jimmy Lake being let go and Jeff Ulbrich being brought in here. And Ulbrich is going to want to have the team emulate. When you're talking about Jeff Ulbrich and Raheem Morris, what do they have in common, boys and girls, moms and dads? They were both on the 2016 Falcons Super Bowl. They were the staff. Ulbrich was the linebacker's coach. Right? All right. And so they were both on the staff because eventually when Dan Quinn was let go, Raheem became the interim. So they work together. They know each other. They know how each other works. And what did Ulbrich have in 2016? Well, did he have a great defense? No, but he had a workable defense. And one of the things that was built around, it was a star at every level, Grady, and then Deion Jones and Keanu Neal. So it started, and then a veteran in Rico that was really, you know, impactful to them, and that's what Jesse Bates really is now, which is why they signed Jordan Fuller as a veteran who can, you know, come in and help with that.
Hey, let me address the winning part. So the Falcons, now, the Steelers game was an outlier. They wasn't ready. They got beat. They got whooped in the Steelers game. So they come in and they play Philly second game of the year. They didn't win that game because they was a better team. They won that game because they played winning football, and they let the Eagles lose that game. Next game, they come and play Kansas City.
I don't want to go down the hole. I don't want to go down the hole. I mean,
no,
I don't want to
saying,
go down the
they played winning football. They were 6-3 at a point until Kirk Cousins hijacked the season being selfish. We were 6-3.
And yeah, I know. I'm aware of that.
So they were playing winning football. This was a winning team.
Of course
team.
It was.
Yeah, this was a winning team. We should have at least won.
This is why the broke down liar is going to have a hard time when he walks into that locker room for the first time when we get to mandatory training camp in July and he's got to face those guys. What's he going to say?
Yeah, I
presuming
think
he's still on the team at that
team.
Point, what is he? Because it's going to be, in my world, it's ice cold shoulder time.
Yeah, I think they should hold him the whole year. Yeah, he don't get to start until they get a fourth round or a fifth round pick for him.
Well, we'll see what they do. I think they would, again, with Terry Fontenot being on the clock. I think and appreciate the call, Meat. I think that Terry Fontenot would prefer to trade Kirk Cousins now, because again, trading him in the season for a draft pick in 2026 doesn't necessarily help you now, right? Because it's 2026 and you need the help. Now, you really need that. Not having a third, a fifth, and a sixth puts you in a box in the draft, which is why I go back and circle back to the fact that, you know, his inclination is to draft the best player available on his board, and I don't think I'll have any choice but to do that, because he's gonna have to look at his board, and presuming that they don't make a trade into the third round or trade back, whatever he does in the first and second round, those two players are going to have to start for this team immediately. So you have to start looking at places where, okay, where is there an open starting spot, not just a camp battle, or you're not moving. They signed Jordan Fuller to start at safety. So Jesse Bates and Jordan Fuller are your starters. They paid Jordan Fuller to start. That says you're not drafting Malachi Starks. You're just not. I mean, he could be the best guy on the board, but at this point, as much as you can draft into a position that you already have a player, which he's done before, again, with Bijan when you had Tyler, with Penix when you had Cousins, he has to win now. There's no luxury pick. Those are kind of they're nice, but those are luxury picks. I'm going to draft another star into a position I already have a starter in. That's a luxury pick. I think he's in a bit of a different spot now. He'll take the best player on the board in a position of need. So what are the positions of need? Nickel is a position of need. Right? Pretty obvious. You know, center is not, because they tendered Ryan Neuzel to start. Again, they have a starter. Now, I can't speak to the interior defensive line. At the moment, the two guys kind of anchoring the middle of the line are Onyemata and Rukororo. Does Jeff Ulbrich look at those two guys and say, those are my two starters? Or is he looking at, you know, a Walter Nolan and saying, hey, listen, I can upgrade and put Walter Nolan in there because he's younger than Onyemata or he's better than Rook? I don't know. So, but it's possible that interior defensive line is a place that he could go to. And again, I don't know what's on their board. If they covet Mike Green and they think that Mike Green is number four or five on their board, you know, he's right up there with the Travis Hunters of the world, you know, and they're sitting there at 15, they may say, look, we love Ebikadi, but Mike Green is going to be a difference maker for us. And so could they go edge in that regard? Yeah, sure, of course they could. Wide receiver. Well, look, we like Darnell Mooney, but is, you know, if Luther Burden falls to him and they say Luther Burden is a take the top off the, we need Luther Burden, and you can't go out of your ever-loving mind if he does. Because I know that some fans are going to go out of their ever, I see it all the time on X. I see you, if they draft a wide receiver, I'm going to set the place on fire. I'm okay, but what is he looking at? Terry Fontenot has to build a team that can win right now. Correct? Everybody understand that, right? They have to, El Serrato, toe meets slither on that opening game, click, clock starts ticking. He's got to get to probably double-digit wins and the playoffs. And he's got to do that. We just went over, he's got a lot of guys starting now. You know, this is really his, this is his team. There's, you know, with Grady gone, who's not his, there are very few guys that are not his guys, right? Jake Matthews, not his guy. Outside of that, are there any guys, let me go through, how many guys, Dom, how many guys on this team are not his guys who are starting for him? I guess Lindstrom wouldn't be his guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Lindstrom and McGarry were drafted in the same year, so probably neither of those two. And Jake Matthews is not his guy. That might be it. Anymore. Everybody else is his guy. He either signed him as a free agent or drafted him, right? Pretty sure. Lindstrom, McGarry, and Matthews. That'd be about it. Because Neuzel's his guy. Bergeron's his guy. Penix. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're all his guys. On offense, sure. And then on defense, with Grady gone, I think they're all his guys. Who isn't a guy that he brought in? This is his team. So, yeah, I think it's just those three guys. Unless I'm missing somebody, I don't think I am. Well, okay, what year did AJ come in? AJ may not be his guy. I just thought about that. AJ may be a Dimitroff guy. Matter of fact, I almost want to say he was, because AJ was coming off that title game where he got kind of burned and people were screaming, I can't believe you took that stiff from Clemson. It was, you know, your last time Jamar Chase was just eating him alive, blah, 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 blah. And so I think Dimitroff drafted AJ. Yeah, I'm pretty sure now that I think about it. So I'll go with those four. McGarry, Lindstrom, Matthews, and AJ Terrell. Everybody else in the 2-deep, everybody else on the roster is a Terry Fontenot guy. So he's going to have to try, and this is, again, goes back to having to make a move now to try to increase your chances of winning, because you can get another player or use that third pick to move up to get another player. It's going to be really fascinating, because he's always been, I'm going to take the best player available. What if the best player available is Ty Warren? You know, you're not drafting a tight end. You can't walk me through that scenario. But if the best player available, if Luther Burden for some reason drops to 15, and you're going, well, Luther Burden's a game breaker who can be our game breaker, and I like Darnell Mooney, and everybody in Atlanta will go, I mean, berserko. But missing the understanding here that he's got to win now. And the one thing that Penix doesn't necessarily have is a stretch, drag a safety down the field wide receiver. I like Mooney. I like Ray Ray. I like Pitts. I love Drake. I like them. They're fine. I like Hodge. I like the group. But none of those guys is a take the top off down the field, 50-yard, and that's Michael Penix's game, by the way. It's part of what he really does well, is take the top off of defense. He's not just a possession, throw it down the field, you know, 10-yard, dump-off quarterback. He's a, I got the cannon arm, I've got the touch, I can throw it and make every throw in the book, which is, he can. And, by the way, if I drag a safety, that suddenly that opens up. Because, you know, again, I like to play football in my mind, but if you send both Kyle Pitts and you know, Egbuka or Burden down the field and they're both running, you know, straight line routes, you know, with one of those guys on the outside and Pitts on the inside, if the safety vacates to go with then Pitts just breaks it off to the post, and the next thing you know, right down the middle of the field. So I think they want to have kind of that big playability in the passing game. Zach Robinson does, that's for sure. He wants to be able to take the top off the defense, but he can't do that unless he can move the defense off its spot, and you can't do that if you don't have the guy that can do that. You know, it's not like anybody on defense on another team, and this is no offense to Darnell Mooney or Ray-Ray McCloud or Cardale Hodge. Drake is not that guy, okay? He is not that guy. I mean, can he make? Yes, but that's not his game. Drake is a quasi-super upscale possession wide receiver, which is what we need him to be, you know, but he's not a, you know, down the field, you know, kind of Julio take it off the top kind of guy. But the rest of those guys, if you're on defense and you're scouting and you're playing against the Atlanta Falcons, you're lining up and you're a safety and you're looking at these guys, are you saying, okay, I really have to pay attention to that dude? No, I don't think there's a guy there. I think you're just kind of playing your base and trying to pick and choose where Penix is going to go with the ball, and, you know, based on the down and distance and the situation of the game. But I don't think you're necessarily looking at anybody but Drake. And, okay, we know that Drake is not going to go, you know, the odds of Drake London running a, you know, an old-school fly route are probably zero. So we don't necessarily have to worry about the deep ball here. We can kind of crunch, step up a few more yards and cover through the box here. Because who's the biggest play threat right now? Who's the biggest play threat in the receiving core of the Atlanta Falcons? Who is the one guy, Mooney a little bit, right? But who's the real big right now? It's Kyle Pitts, okay? He's the big receiving downfield threat at the moment. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I think he does that fairly well. You see, I know all you guys hate Kyle Pitts, but he does that fairly well. He's one of the better big play tight ends in the NFL. Talk about other parts of his game that he's not, but he does that well. He's got a lot of big play. He made a lot of big, long plays down the field, okay? If he hangs onto the ball at the goal line, for example, that would help. But, yeah, so don't lose your ever-loving mind if they draft a wide receiver. And you're like, there's no way they could do that. Well, yeah, there is. I'm just telling you, they have to win now. And you're going, we need an edge. And they're going to go, wait, we have, how many guys do we have to rush the passer? You got outside linebackers like Diablo who can rush the passer, and Ellis who can rush the passer, and Ebikadi and Trice and Floyd. Now you have Cox. You have Zach Harrison. You got a lot of guys that can rush the passer. Now, whether they do that or not, or how effective they are, though, again, I'm going to give you one stat. Once they made the change from Jimmy Lake, just keep this in mind in the discussions, once they made the change from Jimmy Lake in the last six games of the year of last season, who was second in the entire NFL in sacks? Last six games of the year, once they made the change from Jimmy Lake, who was second in the entire NFL in sacks, well, that would be Arnold Ebikadi. Do you know that? Are they looking at Ebikadi saying he's 12 to 14? If you missed our discussion with Grant McCauley, Braves open up on Thursday. We're going to bring that back in just a moment here on Sports Radio 92 on the game. Really good, insightful stuff from a Braves expert. 92 on the game from the Northern Kia Studios. John Frigge with you on a Saturday. Bottom of the hour, we take you to live coverage. Mike Conney, Jason Longshore, Atlanta United, FC Cincinnati. It will be an intriguing game. Both teams are dealing with some injury situations here. And see if Atlanta United can not just get expected goals, but actually get real goals as they take on FC Cincinnati and try and see if they can get a W, put back at the board and get three more points. And let's hope that all kind of works out. Again, live coverage at 1:30, bottom of the hour. Mike and Jason live from Ohio, Atlanta United, FC Cincinnati. 6:30 tonight, the Atlanta Hawks host the Golden State Warriors. I do want to let you know again that 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip, live on 92.9 The Game. Real Voice of the Hawks with a call from State Farm Arena. If you're going to the game, no Steph Curry, okay? He did not make the trip. He got He got hit. Steph got hit like Trey gets hit with no call, and it was like, really? The MRI doesn't look like it's bad, but I think caution is being used here by the Warriors, so Steph did not make the trip here to Atlanta, but it will still be Jimmy Butler. They're 16-3 with Jimmy Butler, by the way, and Jonathan Kuminga, and, of course, Draymond. So, again, tonight we'll have 6:30 coverage, Atlanta Hawks. And if you're looking for the NCAA tournament, the round of 32, that is on our sister station, 1380 News and Talk, WAOK. So we got United today at 1:30. You got the Hawks tonight at 6:30. We got WAOK with the NCAA tournament. And, oh, that's right, the Braves. The Braves season opener is this coming Thursday in San Diego. So they start on the West Coast in a really difficult start with the Padres and the Dodgers. First seven games, spend the first week of the season out on the West Coast. So maybe that's a good thing that they just get it out of the way. But, boy, difficult start. Don't think anybody in baseball is going to have a more difficult first week than the Braves in having to play seven road games in Southern California. Had a chance to catch up with Grant McCauley and talk about all the issues with the Braves. Injuries, offense, defense, rotation, bullpen. Here's your primer, my discussion with Grant McCauley, our Braves insider. Let's begin with the health of the team, because you're there and you laid eyes on them. I'll tell you the three kind of in the order is I think we're looking at them returning. Sean Murphy, Spencer Strider, Ronald Acuna. Tell me how all are doing and when you expect them back.
I think that's pretty accurate. Spencer Strider and Sean Murphy, I think you could target the middle of April. Maybe Sean's back a little bit sooner. Just kind of depends on what Spencer's rehab assignment looks like and how quickly he's able to build up the innings that he needs to rejoin the rotation. That's really the question there. I haven't heard anything as far as setbacks for Sean Murphy, so I think it's just kind of that 4 to 6 week window, which, you know, is unfortunate based on the timing. We saw what happened to him last year, but hopefully he's able to get a few at bats and get himself back in there and be a very big part of what the club was hoping for him to do, not only with trading and bringing him over here, but obviously for 2025 to be that kind of that rock behind the plate and really help lead this pitching staff. So that leaves Ronald Acuna Jr. That's the big one that everybody has been anticipating for the lineup, especially after watching them struggle last year. Even Ronald was not the player that he wanted to be last year the first couple of months. I still think early May, maybe the first week. I could be a little optimistic there, but from everything I saw in spring training, everything I heard from him and talking to Alex Anthopoulos in depth, which you'll be able to hear on Monday night on From the Diamond, my conversation with Alex, they feel pretty confident about where everybody is. It's about avoiding setbacks and doing everything they need to do, checking all those boxes to get these guys back at the right time.
All right, Grant McCauley, at Grant McCauley. McCauley is 1C, McCauley. You can join 67,000 other followers of Grant on X, and you can talk Braves and follow him on From the Diamond again, as you mentioned, tomorrow night. Now, let's get to, I want to go through the team kind of area by area if I can. My biggest concern, if I have a concern, starting the season is in the bullpen. I know you have a 9. I'm not sure who 7 and 8 are. I don't know kind of how the middle of the bullpen is going to be kind of set up here, so I need you to take me through it. Now, having said that, I also want to throw this in. You take a flyer on Kimbrel, bringing him back, mm-hmm. And I noticed you posted last night that Jesse Chavez is available. Is that another flyer they're going to? Is that something that would actually?
We'll, I mean, with a side of 68-year-old guy, out anymore? Yeah, I right. Can't rule it out anymore. It would be like his 17th stint with the club in the last 5 years. So who's to say?
Mm-hmm. Well, we need him out there so somebody can pick him up on home runs. I mean, that's right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that he offers, that's for sure. But I can kind of piece together the bullpen for you to kind of get back to like the meat and potatoes of this discussion, sure. Because it's not Jesse Chavez is obviously not, you know, plan A to fix everything or to solve everything or to align everything even, though he would be, I think, welcome back with open arms. But putting that aside, I mean, you know, Raisel Iglesias is covering the 9th inning, as you mentioned. I think Pierce Johnson and Dylan Lee are your, you know, righty-lefty setup men, whether that's one in the 7th, one in the 8th. Then I think Daisbell Hernandez is a guy who could get some run this year as someone that they saw a year ago that they believe has big stuff that can get some swing and miss and could also be a high-leverage arm for them. Then that second lefty is Aaron Bummer, the veteran. They restructured his contract, so he's still around. And I think if you need that lefty to come in, maybe get that ground ball double play in the 6th or 7th inning, that could be who you turn to there. Once you get beyond that, yep, there's Craig Kimbrel. That could be, you know, a month or so away. I'm curious when the rotation, how it all shakes out. Is Grant Holmes a guy that ends up with his profile? Because he does miss bats.
If he's not in the rotation, could he help you out as a big-time reliever, a swingman of sorts that is the multi-inning weapon? Or if you need a spot starter or just somebody to cover a bunch of innings or maybe just come in and dominate. I mean, he did that last year. He did a little of everything. So I'm intrigued to see where he fits into everything. And then I think it's a little bit of just trying to figure out who over the course of the season might just take one of these jobs and run with it. So no Joe Jimenez obviously hurts this club. When you lose A.J. Minter and don't have your best righty reliever, your non-closer anyway, that's going to be difficult. But I still think there's enough quantity of the quality there, and I think Alex is going to look to find ways to add to that as well over the course of the season.
All right, Grant McCauley, since you brought up Grant Holmes, let's go to the starters. I believe that this is me being a Braves homer, I guess, to some degree, that it's potentially that even without Max Fried, and we wish the best for Michael Soroka, geez, he could sure. He could be something. Even without those guys, and even without a Charlie Morton, they may still have the best rotation in the game. You start looking at Chris Sale and Lopez and what Schwellenbach could grow into.
Yep.
If Strider comes back and looks like he did, that top four, along with maybe Ian Anderson or Elder or somebody else, it could be lights out good.
Yeah, I'm going to throw another name in there that has really opened some eyes this spring, and that's A.J. Smith-Shoffer. And this is a kid with big-time electric stuff that was about, I don't know, 2-3 years ahead of schedule when he came up in 2023. And, you know, they turned to him because they believed in the stuff. But over the last couple of years, I think he has been able to polish his arsenal and really start to learn some of the things that could make him successful as a big league starter. And clearly, the Braves saw the potential of who he could be when they turned to him in a dire situation to start game one of that wild card series against San Diego. Now, that didn't work out, but I would still tell you, they have carried him in the postseason twice. They're once again looking for him to, I think, take a big step forward. I think it's a measured step, maybe, because you're not asking him to front a rotation. But A.J. Smith-Shawver at five is something I think a lot of clubs out there would very much like to be discussing. Then you do have Ian Anderson. You also have Hurston Waldrop, who's going to be at AAA Gwinnett mm-hmm. this year, who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago, needs to put some things together in the same way that A.J. Smith-Shawver has been looking to do that. Then there is Bryce Elder. Now, Ian Anderson is interesting because he is out of options. So if he doesn't make the club, which I believe he will make the club, and based on all the maneuvering they've done in the past week, it seems to indicate that that will be the case, then his time with the Braves could be over. He'd be exposed to waivers, and maybe some other club out there says, yeah, we'll take that guy. So that behind the starting four of once you get Strider back in there, you've got a Cy Young winner in Chris Sale, who was as good at 35 as he was, I think, at just about any point in his career. Lopez opened a lot of eyes, and Spencer Schwellenbach opened even more. So that is a tantalizing starting four. You need health to make it all come together, and you'd like to have at least three or four of those guys to choose from when you get to October. That's why you want the quantity of it. But I do think that this is as strong a rotation, at least on paper right now, as any you'll find in the National League outside of the Dodgers, who for some reason have 9 starters. And, oh, it's because they just seem to hoard just about everything.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, let's go to the outfield here. The signing of Alex Verdugo was not something I really anticipated. I was sort of surprised by it, but, you know, another depth veteran guy here. As you look at the outfield, and I want you to include Acuna Jr. in this because, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at a healthy Ronald by the middle of May and Michael Harrison, who knows what his ceiling is, and Profar as the starters, where does a Verdugo fit in? Where does De La Cruz fit in? Where does, you know, certainly Kelnick fit in here? And how good is this outfield? Because I look at the starting rotation, and then I look at the outfield and go, man, is that the best outfield in baseball if it's healthy?
Yeah, we asked Ronald Acuna Jr. that at the start of spring training. He says, yeah. And actually, the question wasn't even asked that way. Like, what do you think of the outfield? Pretty much laid out the same way that you did as far as the starters are concerned. And he says, best outfield in baseball for me. Like, that's what it is. And getting Ronald back obviously elevates everything for this team, from the lineup to the outfield, just the whole nine. That's just what happens when you've got a superstar player of that magnitude. But I've said this year after year after year, I'm just looking for that huge season from Michael Harris II. I mean, he came up one Rookie of the Year. Maybe that took some people by surprise, but I think we saw it again in 23 and again in 24. There were stretches where, yes, he struggled, and then there were stretches where he looked like a star player, because I think he is a star player. So I'm excited to see him healthy over the course of 162. I think that's been the only thing that's truly interrupted his ascent to being a star-level player in all of baseball, not just another good player on the Atlanta Braves. Obviously, for Jerickson Profar coming in on that 3-year deal, the big get for the winter. He's a switch hitter, a good hitter at that. You know, he has some very professional at-bats. They like adding him into this lineup, and he's going to be the starting left fielder. And that does not leave a whole lot of room for the Jared Kelnicks, the Brian De La Cruzes, and now the Alex Verdugos. But those guys, I think, could still have a role to play because the Braves have found out in 2024, obviously in 2021. I mean, just about every year they have to deal with some kind of injury issue where you've got to have that depth. And it appears this year that Alex has decided, okay, well, maybe I couldn't do some of the things I wanted to do over the winter as far as impact moves are concerned, but we don't want to be caught trying to scour the waiver wire and find somebody to fit in here on short notice. Let's go ahead and build layers of depth. I think that's a very good thing for this club.
Grant, to the infield, Riley, Ozzie, and of course, you look at those two being injured for, an appreciable amount of time last year. You know, how healthy are they to begin? And then Olson, who I still think it was the baseball, but that's a different story. Of those three, where do we stand? Who do you think is going to have that big, big season?
Yeah, I think you look at the corners. I mean, Austin Riley every year is an MVP candidate when healthy, and he was starting to show that last year after a slow start, and then he got hit on the hand and missed the rest of the season, spent 14 weeks in a cast. So it was a long odyssey for him. And then Ozzie, not only did he break a toe, but he also had to deal with a broken wrist. So it was a pretty tough season for him, but there aren't many second basemen out there that you could say, when healthy, are going to hit you 30 homers, push 100 runs batted in, maybe 40 doubles. I mean, he has some appreciable skills out there that not a lot of second basemen can give you. And then, of course, Matt Olson. I don't know that it was the baseball, but I certainly won't say that it's not, because I think Major League Baseball has played around with it. But asking Matt Olson more specifically kind of what was not working for him when he was really going through it in the middle of the summer, he said he felt like he just got too mechanical and he needed to stop thinking about everything and just start going out and doing and just letting it ride. And once he did that, and I know he still continued to work and make the mechanical adjustments and things he needed to, that second half was a lot more like the Matt Olson I think we've come to expect and what he showed that he is capable of in his career year of 23. I'm not saying 58 home runs needs to happen every year. It'd be nice if it did, but this is a guy that has some serious, serious power. And I think that, you know, he could have a year like that or a huge year just about any year. That's why the Braves went out and got him. So it's a powerful infield. You don't have a lot going on at shortstop. I think that the Braves would have upgraded if they could have. That's something I'll talk about on From the Diamond on Monday night. But if you've got everything else we've talked about, John, all clicking, and obviously catcher's got to be in there as well, and Orlando Arcia is playing a decent shortstop for you and batting ninth, you're not really worried as much about what his production is, though you would like more than you got in 2024. There's no two ways about that.
All right, Grant, final question here is kind of a two-parter. They start the season Thursday and on the West Coast. Is it a good deal to get that kind of a 7-game trip at San Diego at the Dodgers sort of out of the way? It's certainly as tough an opener as any team in all of baseball is going to have to go through. So it really tests your mettle before you come home. Speak to that and also speak to kind of the broader picture of your expectation of what you think this team ought to do this year.
I mean, obviously the Braves are going to go out there and try to win a couple of series. It will be challenging. San Diego's where their season ended last year. Padres had an intriguing winter. There's some talks about maybe that's a club that's tapped out of money, and this could be a very, very different 2025 for them. We'll see how that all plays out. But more specifically for the Braves, you know, they'll go out. The West Coast has not always been kind to them, but this is a very good club. If they can go out there and take a couple of series or just come home as close to or around, you know, that 500 mark, and then start to settle in a little bit, it will be a bit of an adjustment going from playing in the middle of the afternoon in Florida to playing night games out on the West Coast. So when they come home to adjust, when they finally get back to Truist Park to start the season at home, I think it's going to be a little bit interesting as far as the timing is concerned. But this is a club that has high expectations. They won 89 games last year and got into the playoffs despite everything that went wrong. I think their expectation, again, is to compete for the National League East title. Brian Snitker told me flat out, I mean, that's step one. We have to punch our ticket so we have a chance to get to the postseason and do something special. We can't do that if we're just aiming at a wild card and hoping that the numbers game's on our side. If we win the division, we're in, and we've got to figure out a way to do that. And then, John, you, me, and anybody listening knows what the next step is. You got to figure out ways to win in October again. I know there's been a lot of focus on the pitching. I understand that. But this is a club that hasn't hit in October the last 3 years either. They've got to find that switch. They've got to flip it, and they've got to get some things done. Some good pitching, There's some close games, some wins start to pile up. I think this is a club that can get real confident and do some big things, but they've got to go out there and prove it again because it's been a minute since the Braves have had the kind of October success they've wanted to.
Boy, I can't wait for the season to start. Grant McCauley getting me fired up again from the Diamond tomorrow night on Sports Radio 92 and the game Thursday opener in San Diego. You got to go San Diego, got to go to Chavez Ravine, Petco Park down in the gas lamp, then Chavez Ravine against the Dodgers, then come home for the home opener against the Miami Marlins. Taking it to the bottom of the hour, we have First Things First, which is Atlanta United. About a little over 12 minutes away from our coverage with Mike Conney and Jason Longshore of Atlanta United at FC Cincinnati, live on your home of the Five Stripes, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Busy day on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. If you're looking for the NCAA round of 32, it's on our sister station, 1380 News and Talk WAOK. Halftime of the first game of the day of the round of 32, and Purdue leads McNeese by 18 at the break. Not going to say it's over, but it's over. Arkansas and St. John's at 2:40. Michigan and Texas A&M at 5:15. Drake and Texas Tech at 6:10, and then the four night games are all really good. Creighton and Auburn, Room against Kalkbrenner, and Pearl against McDermott, 7:10. BYU against Wisconsin at 7:45, really good, another really good matchup. Then you've got Mark Few against Kelvin Sampson, Zags against Houston at 8:40, and then it rounds out with Tennessee. Rick Barnes against Mick Cronin's UCLA Bruins at 9:40 tonight. So really, really good matchups. Really good day of basketball. Going to be a good day of soccer, too. Atlanta United about 5 minutes away from taking it to Atlanta United FC Cincinnati. And then that's with Mike and Jason. 6:30 tonight, we'll have coverage of the Hawks and Warriors from State Farm Arena. And again, no Steph Curry tonight. He didn't make the trip after getting knocked hard to the floor the other night. He's okay, but they're just erring on the side of caution here. The Dominator is running the show now. He's been running the board here for a little while. I haven't had a chance to say hi to him. Hey, Dom, what is up?
Nothing much, Fricky. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You said, now, next week I'll be able to see you because I'm coming back to the Big A. I'm going to do a show. I haven't done shows in the studio in a long time. I'm excited about getting back in.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels like it'll be like the first time in like a year that I've seen you.
Right. Probably. You know, unless we cross paths during the Falcon season. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be a while. So I'm really looking forward to next weekend being in studio. So that'll be fun. Though I'm coming down, to see my daughter and Danny, who's, you know, she's over there at the Home Depot backyard. I don't think she's super happy with me right now because I didn't give any spoilers away, but I texted her this morning and I said, any mark sucks. And she's like, no, don't tell me anything. I haven't watched it yet.
What movie was that?
Any Mark. Any Mark. Because we thought Audi Mark was the bad dude. And it turns out that Any Mark sucks.
Gotcha.
Okay. Any Mark. Any Mark is a bad dude. You know, or at least, we'll see. There's season 3 coming up. We'll find out. She's like, don't tell me nothing. And if you don't watch Severance, you're not going to get any of those references. But, you know, it's, yeah. I was watching it, and I was like, oh, you blankety-blankety, Mark.
Have you been enjoying season 2? Because I'm not into Severance, but I know some people have kind of been saying season 2 is a little hit or miss.
Well, at least a lot of things get explained finally in the final episode.
Okay, got you.
Okay. I understand what MDR is. I understand what's going on now. Okay, fine. I get it, you know. Maybe because, you know, all right, I don't want to spoil it for anybody. All right, I get it. Okay, I understand what they're doing. Okay, you know. So it's like, oh, it's finally starting to make a little bit of sense here, what's going on. So, and it sets up season 3. So you knew that was happening because they announced immediately. They actually released it early and then immediately announced, hey, season 3 is coming. And anyway, okay, we know we're not going to get full resolution here. We knew that was going to happen with Lumen and Mark Scout. I enjoy that show. So anyway, she's mad at me because I said any Mark sucks and she hasn't seen it yet. I'm like, well, then watch it.
Yeah.
You know, that's all he said. You know, it didn't tell you anything happened. Just...
Yeah, that's not really a spoiler. She can't get too mad at you for that. Like, I didn't really give anything away there.
No, except that, you know, there's a battle between any mark and outie mark, and I told you which one
is the bad
guy. Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so what a week, huh? I'm really excited to see the Braves on Thursday, excited to see, you know, what the Hawks do down the stretch here. And 13 games to go, one game ahead of Orlando, see if they can hold on to that seventh spot. And now today, Dom, in just a minute, about 90 seconds away, we're going to take you to Atlanta United. I need to see Atlanta United put a couple to three goals on the board today. I need stuff in the back of the net.
Yeah, I would say Latte Loth has been the only one really getting it done goal-wise. We need other people to start stepping up, man.
Yep, I need to see Silva do stuff. I need to see, you know, I don't know where Miggy's figuring into all this right now, but I need to see, you know, the United's a little banged up. So is FC Cincinnati. They're really banged up. So we'll be without guys, no Tiari, no Klitsch. I mean, so we'll see how this kind of all works for Atlanta United today. My thanks to all of you that called in. My thanks especially to Grant McCauley, host of From the Diamond and other places. My thanks to Deshaun Tate. Deshaun's going to actually join me again tomorrow morning back here at 9 to 11, talk about what happens today and his kind of look ahead to the 8 games tomorrow. As we, by the time we get to about, you know, midnight Sunday night, we'll be down to the Sweet 16. It's amazing always how fast it goes. 68, now we only have 32 left. All right, stand by. Atlanta United, FC Cincinnati. It's all ahead right here on your home of the Five Stripes. Live coverage from Ohio with Mike and Jason on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.